Welcome back to part two of our sit down with the one and only Miss Carol Potter. And if you haven't heard part one, check it out. We talk about how Carol was cast in 90210, working with the iconic Erin Spelling, what it was like when she first met Shannon and Jason and Tori and Jenny and Luke and Brian and Ian. So much nostalgia. We talk all about the beginning of 90210. We talk about the rumored red dress, Shannon's backstage tactics. I just had a lot of questions for Carol. Carol's amazing. We talk about Cindy Walsh, what happens when people come up to her and forget that she's Carol Potter and not Cindy Walsh. And now stay tuned for part two of our chat with Miss Carol Potter.
One of my favorite stories is, you know, there was a period where you'd show up on the set, right, and all of the kids would sort of slowly wander in, you know, and the directors would be tearing their hair out. Well, the first time, you know, Jason directed one of the episodes, the very next episode he was in, he was the first one on set when called. He was, you know, Mr. Show Up, Be There. Because he suddenly saw from the other side of the camera what it cost when people aren't prompt and come when they're called, you know? It was like, wow, somebody figured something out there.
That's an interesting point. Do you think, because, you know, now we're in social media and back then it wasn't, it was different, but we have like the print magazines. Like, do you think this whole thing with Shannon, I mean, the bad girl and all this, like, do you think it would have been a thing if she were a man? Like if this were Luke or Jason?
I think it would have been approached very differently. I mean, in the same way that for the guys, you know, having all of this fame and having women throwing themselves at them was, that all stoked their ego. I think that, you know, women who behave in those ways are still called sluts and men are not. There is totally a double standard. And I do think that it's, you know, that they use that bad girl thing as much as a titillation factor. You know, and I don't know Shannon well, so I don't know if some of that was maybe just deliberate, because as they say, no publicity is bad publicity. Publicity is publicity. People know who you are. And, you know, so I wouldn't even know how to begin to have an opinion on that. But I do think that we are very patriarchal culture still. And that really influences the kinds of pressures that are put on, especially young women. You know, by the time, you know, women are my age, nobody pays any attention to them anymore. So that's another reason why this is so fun. Normally I'd be fading into oblivion, but because of 90210, suddenly people are interested in me. It's like, it's quite lovely.
Well, I would have wanted to talk to you 5 years ago, 10 years ago, if I was doing this at the time. Well,
yes, right.
It never went away for me. I didn't even really realize that it was such a big resurgence now. Cause like for me, it's always just, you know, you have your shows that you're always like, this is on brand for the podcast. This is on brand for my personal life. Like just this is a self-indulgent show. I'm happy to do it regardless. But no, I mean, that's a good point. And you never, I guess you kind of already answered this, you never wanted to like take someone like Shannon, not as a mother, just as like an actress to actress. Like, you know, you were appreciative. Like, I'm making a lot of money. Like, just,
I just didn't feel that was my role. I, you know, in order to do something like that, you have to have established a connection with somebody. And I didn't really know enough about what was going on. I know that Shannon was under a lot of pressure. I mean, I think her family depended on her a great deal, and that's very difficult for a young person. And she was very self-motivated in her career. but yeah, I wouldn't presume to take that kind of a role. I mean, you know, it might be different in a play. You know, I'm doing a play. I was doing a play. Who knows if it'll come back, but we were doing it every January. And I have a very different relationship to the younger people in the show. And I would feel very comfortable doing something like that with them. I saw somebody, you know, you got to straighten up and fly, right? This will not fly, right? You know, generally I go for more the supporting the right things that people are doing rather than confronting the problematic things. But I would feel comfortable doing that with this company. And, you know, it's possible. I mean, I'm capable of being intimidated by people who are famous and, you know, and, you know, none of the girls sought me out for any kind of
advice,
intimacy or advice or anything like that. I mean, I knew they had people in their lives who were, the last thing you need is one more person doesn't really know you very well, telling you what to do when you've already got three voices in your ears. You know, you've got your agent, your manager, your publicist, your parents. It's
yeah, you're not going to listen.
It's overwhelming and confusing. And it wouldn't be helpful.
Is it really depressing, or was it depressing, you know, in 1995 when Jim and Cindy got this great opportunity in Hong Kong and you opened the script and you're like, wait, is this real? Like,
I was pretty disappointed. I was, you know, but at the same time, that was when I decided to go back to school. I mean, I had been thinking about, I was working at I had started at a new church and a marriage and family therapist. With some other people had organized a listening ministry, right? We were supervised by licensed therapists. We had great training and I had, you know, that had been my first career idea. I always wanted to be an actress since I was like 5 years old, but I didn't know anything about it or how to do it, right? So when I went to college, my dad was a psychiatrist and I'd always been interested in psychology. So I majored in psychology, and that was the plan. I was going to be a therapist, and then everything blew up and I said, well, gee, why don't I do what I've always wanted? I mean, I acted all through, you know, from elementary school to junior high to high school to through college. I was always acting. And so it was sort of like going back to my original idea. And I just got really excited about it. I got passionate about it. To be sitting with people and see their lives change, see them become more compassionate towards themselves, more content with their lives, or more focused on what they really wanted to focus on. It felt really good.
And that was right after 90210.
Yeah. So I went back to school. We finished in the spring of 95 and I started school in that fall.
Wow.
And
you wouldn't have done that if the show continued.
I don't think so. I think I would have continued with the show, and maybe at some point I would have gone back, but doing the show it was a full-time program.
Yeah.
I was still doing a lot of auditioning. So it had a great schedule for me. There was a Tuesday, Thursday, or Saturday block of classes. And you didn't have to choose what class. They just gave it to you. And so I signed up for Tuesday. If I got an audition, I could come back and get the same material Thursday or Saturday. So it worked perfectly
for
what I needed at that time.
What about, did your team, you know, your manager, agent, everyone say like, this is the time to strike, right? Like you off the one of the hottest shows.
Well, I was working with a manager who was a good friend of mine, and she was the one who actually wrote a letter to Aaron Spelling when the casting for Sunset Beach happened and said, don't you think Carol Potter would be great for this role? I think that's the only role I've ever gotten that I haven't had to audition for. But she was, you know, and there was a point at which I was getting my training. So I had graduated and I was collecting, you have to have so many hours to sit for your exam. And I was doing that. And because I was already doing that when we negotiated with the soap, and they were doing the soap like nighttime television. You know, when I was doing soaps in New York, it was like you were there at the crack of dawn and you were there until the last moment, because they could only film everything in sequence because it was so difficult to edit videotape, and they had to have it ready the next day. So it was all, so you'd go through the whole thing, you know, there'd be blocking rehearsal, you know, dress rehearsal and the final take. And this was done, all the things, all the scenes in this location, all the scenes in that location. And occasionally, you know, there's a big scene that takes all week. And basically, I saw clients on particular days and I'd call the week before and say, okay, what does the schedule look like next week? So, and they'd let me know, okay, you're going to have to work all week. And so then I could tell my clients, I'm not going to be available next week. Right. So we'll meet the week after. So I was able to work it out. And I'm telling you, if that show had lasted, I would have done that the rest of my life. I might never have sat for my licensing exams. Yeah, I probably would have sat for the licensing exams, but it was such a great balance.
Yeah, that's like a perfect. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy. Check out betterhelp.com/velvetrope. Listen, life is full of stress. It doesn't matter who you are or where you are. Life is stressful. You may not be feeling down and out and depressed or like you're at a total loss, but if your stress level is high, like mine, your temper is shorter than usual, like mine, or even if you're starting to feel strain in any of your relationships, you could probably use the chance to unload. Unload the stress and get it out. Talk to someone who's completely unbiased and who's not going to judge you or take sides. If there's stuff you can't tell your friends or family, this is the place to do it. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist. So you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can start communicating with your therapist in under 48 hours. Unload the stressors and get some unbiased feedback. You'd be pretty surprised at what you might gain for it. Try it out. See if it's for you. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and Behind the Velvet Rope listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/velvetrope. That's BETTERHELP.com/velvetrope. BetterHelp.com/velvetrope.
It was all about them, or all about me. You know,
it's like the best of both worlds.
It was like the best of both worlds.
And then at that point, you're probably happy that, you know, the mom isn't the main center. Like you're like,
oh, yeah.
Go and get some money, keep your acting chops up, be a part of a great show.
I enjoy the experience of right. You know, working and being with other people and paying attention to those things. What's my motivation here? What's, you know, what's the emotional content of the scene? What's my relationship?
It ties in.
And then I go on the set, and I did have a couple of, you know, clients who'd say, are you the mom on 90210? And I said, yeah. And they go, ah, I knew it. See, didn't I tell you? Okay. So this is what's going on with us. They would just go, it never got in the way. They would just go right to what's going on.
Well, that's one of the questions I was going to ask you in a few minutes when we got to all of what you do now. I mean, do you have people that, you know, book an appointment, whether it's Zoom or in person, let's come in, and they're like, listen, I got to be honest with you. I mean, do you have fans that will go down that road and at the end say, listen, this has been great. I'll pay your hourly fee, but like, can I have a picture? Has that ever happened?
That has never happened. I did have one couple once who came in, and I worked with them for several months. And on the last day, he turned to her and he said, don't you recognize her? She's the mom on 90210. He'd never said a word the whole time. And I was like, I was shocked.
And that was what, like months and months?
Months. We must have worked together at least 6 months, 4 to 6 months, right? And he never said a thing. I had no idea. Now, I remember when I was doing my training, I was working at Santa Monica High School, and one of the other a wonderful therapist who's a friend of mine, she was in the same training spot with me, and she would go, they all want the mom from 90210 as their therapist, right? And I thought, well, that's a little unfair advantage. So
10 days, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
I have to say there is such a thing as celebrity privilege. I mean, I know we're all talking about white privilege, but there's also celebrity privilege. You know?
Yeah.
Well, it can be weird sometimes because you don't know, is this person being nice to me because I'm Cindy Walsh or because they like me? And they're not exactly the same thing, you know? So, but it does mean that people usually approach me, if they recognize, with a very positive attitude, right? And they're going to give me the benefit of the doubt, for sure.
I think there's totally something like celebrity privilege, especially in the world that we live in now. And it's, you know, you could
it's
out of control.
Yes.
But do you ever think, like, you know, there was something nurturing about Cindy Walsh? Like, what if you played, like you said in the beginning, like a psycho killer or some other?
I know. It's true. I think that the character, I mean, she went to studies counseling, right?
Yeah.
The character really connects well with the persona of being a therapist. So, and that's worked really well for me. I don't know if you remember Anne Gillespie. She played,
yes.
She's a dear friend. And she played, you know, Kelly's
mom. Yeah.
Well, she became a priest.
Wow.
And she was the cocaine addicted alcoholic mother, which is kind of, you know, perfect priest material in a way.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I totally know who she is. But that's strange. Like, I mean, that's good to know, I guess, that like there's not more of people that come and then they're there for the wrong reasons. They want an hour with Cindy Walsh.
Yeah.
What about, you know, did you have scenes with Hilary Swank when she was on? Oscar winner Hilary Swank?
No, they were all of those.
I didn't think so.
Yeah, all of those people who really got their career boosts were with the kids. And
yeah.
Sometimes it was because they were seasons 6 through 10. And sometimes it was just because they showed up at school. If they didn't come to the Walsh house, I didn't meet them.
I mean, that's what I thought. I just figured I would ask.
And it's so funny because people ask me that. Hilary Swank was on our show.
Eva Longoria, Adam Levine from Maroon 5.
Really?
Lucy Liu, Matthew Perry from Friends.
No!
Hilary Swank, though, was an actual real cast member.
For a period of time.
Like 2 years, and then she was fired because the audience just didn't relate to her. She had a child. She was Steve Sanders. I don't think they ever got married. It was Steve Sanders' girlfriend.
And she had a baby out of wedlock.
Yeah, and the audience just didn't take to her. And then I think literally right after she was fired, I think she did Boys Don't Cry. Like it was, I don't know if it was a year or whatever it was, that was the next thing. And then meet the rest.
Yeah, well, that's why she had to leave 90210 so she could.
I think it all worked out for Hilary Swank in the entertainment business.
Yeah, I think things worked out for her, yeah.
Just, you know, if anyone's worried about her. What was it like working with Tiffany Thiessen?
Oh, well, Tiffany's a gal. She's a real sort of gal. And I relate to that. We used to, I didn't know her that well personally. I didn't give her advice for sure or anything like that. But there was a little more sort of back and forth joking on the set. We would riff together. I just remember enjoying being on the set with her a lot. And it's funny because, you know, she was really the bad girl on the show, right? She was sowing dissension everywhere and going, you know, stabbing people in the back right and left. But of course, Cindy just thinks she's lovely because we have this lovely relationship. So it was sort of perfect for the show that I had not a clue. about what was really going on.
That first episode she's in, and it ends where she's like going upstairs and she opens the window and smokes pot. You're like, oh, this is going to be good. You're like, welcome Valerie Malone. This is going to work out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
she
even
had more leeway to do that stuff than would a daughter.
Right.
You know, that for as a character.
And so even though you didn't know them personally and you didn't have any issues with Shannon, it was more like collaborative with Tiffany.
Yeah, yeah. And we just, you know, we had chemistry. I had chemistry with Tiffany, probably more than other than James and Luke, even though I didn't get to do a lot with Luke. We had really good chemistry.
Well, you did do an interview at some point. I don't know when, I forgot. And you admitted that you were had an attraction to Luke.
I think this might have been on Tori. And
I think it was on Tori. Is that what it takes? Does it take, if I were Tori or I really was Brian, maybe, you know, you would have revealed that here today. You just felt comfortable with Tori and Jenny that you revealed it.
I think I had intimated it in another interview and they had picked up on it. Oh, I heard that you, and of course, you know, sitting around with the girls gabbing, it's a different environment that they create. And, you know, I enjoyed that reboot. Was so much fun. I think that was my favorite day of shooting in my entire career. I just enjoyed it so much. And just being with them and, you know, the people that they were and the people that they are now, it was just delightful. Everyone was lovely to me, absolutely lovely. And, you know, this was from a time when we were doing the show, a lot of times, I mean, they were into their own thing and they were just sort of in their own world and they didn't pay any attention to me any more than I paid any attention to them. But the rapport in the room when we were shooting that scene was just sublime. It was so much fun.
And that was like your favorite day of shooting ever?
Ever. Ever.
Wow. Why? Like, what was it about that?
Well, it was a wonderful scene. It was very well written. It was funny. I knew my lines cold. Which I knew that, you know, I knew I needed to know my lines cold because I would be nervous. We were all sitting around, you know, there wasn't a lot of movement action. Jason was directing. He's a wonderful director. I enjoy working with him. And, you know, in between, I mean, we all felt so relaxed with each other. It's like we were old friends. We hadn't seen each other in a long time, but we could all just chill out. I mean, everybody knew everybody very, very well. And it was so nice. It was like a beautiful family reunion, you know.
And that was the first time you kind of reconnected with everyone, like you just all went your own ways.
Yeah.
Did you hear about this reboot before you got the call, and what does that call look like, and who calls?
Well, I did. I heard something. I, you know, read something about, oh, they're doing a reboot, and people started asking me, oh, are you going to be in the reboot? And I said, oh, you know, probably not. It's probably about the kids, you know. And then I read the concept, which was actors trying to get a reboot on. And I thought, to be honest, I thought, oh, that doesn't sound that great. But I have to say, I was very impressed with how they did it. They did it with such panache and awareness, you know, this awareness of what happens to celebrities when they grow older, especially women. I mean, all of the ways that they undercut ideas about celebrity and played on all of these tropes you're talking about the competition with Brenda, right, with Shannon, and all the the stuff that was going on between people on the show. And I thought it was really brilliant and charming and very funny and didn't take itself too seriously. And you know, also included some of the downside of celebrity, which is, you know, people may be stalking you and wanting to murder you, you know.
Yeah.
I was just really impressed. And gosh, the scene I got to do was, I thought it was easy to memorize because I thought it was just, it fit, it felt true as a therapist. You know, they cast me as a therapist.
Yeah.
And a therapist.
So. I mean, that's what's so, I mean, they were in on the joke. That's what was so great
exactly.
about it.
Exactly. Exactly.
Like Shannon, everyone was afraid of Shannon, like in the, it was brilliant. And you are a therapist. Yeah.
It was brilliant. It was extremely well done. I'm so sorry they didn't get another pickup. But
who calls you though? Like, I mean, does that have to go through your agent?
My agent called me. I was in New York at the time. And my agent called me and said, hey, they've called us. Do you want to, you know, everybody's playing themselves. Do you want to, you up for the reboot? I said, oh God, yes. yes. And it was, I was in Vancouver for like, I mean, literally 48 hours. I flew in the evening. I did my thing. We worked all the next day and I flew out the next morning. I got to spend some time with Christina Lise too, who I had known only in really in passing. I mean, it was miraculous to see these young people turn into adults.
Were you shocked that they were, Tori and Jenny were able to get every single person? Because Shannon wasn't doing it.
I know. I don't know how they got her. But, you know, I think that what you were talking about, that I being identified with the role, I think because it had been so long and because they weren't playing those characters anymore.
Right.
Right. They were playing some kind of morphed version of themselves. I suspect that was more appealing to people than, you know, what is Andrea doing 25 years later?
Right.
And, you know, if you're not working, why not? And I think they all got involved in the producing, the production end. They were all listed as producers. So that's an opportunity to engage a little more deeply in the process. And that's always useful.
And I think the psychology behind it, the fact that like people, right, it's a blurred role because people do think that Shannon is Brenda. People do think that Tori is Donna.
It's very
and
blurred.
You know, like if you're not in the business, I'm not insulting everyone in the world, but that is truly what they're not, but you don't, a lot of people.
Right. Well, I'm subject to that too. I remember I was sitting in a little cafe and there was a woman at the next table and I'm thinking, gosh, I feel like I know this woman. Do I know her from church? And I'm going through all these possibilities and I finally realized, oh my God, it's an actress. It's an actress I have seen in movies or TV shows. She's been in my living room, so I think I know her. So we are all subject to that kind of confusion.
Has anyone ever like met you or like wrote to you where it is like a Meryl Streep or someone where you're like, you're a fan, like a Cher, like someone just huge, or like Bobby De Niro where you're like, you watch 90210, what the hell? No.
No. No, I guess the closest I got with that was when I was doing Broadway and Danny Aiello was in the cast and we all went out for drinks one night. And I mean, Bobby Duvall showed up and that was kind of cool getting to meet Bobby Duvall.
That is cool.
Yeah.
What was working with Aaron Spelling like?
Well, he wasn't on the set day to day.
Right. But
what impressed me about him was that first audition that I did. He came right up. And, you know, normally you come into these auditions, there's a bunch of guys, mostly guys, although that's changing. There are more and more women in these roles. You know, you are the casting director's there and you're reading with the casting director, you know, you say hi and they nod or something. And then you do your reading and then you leave. And there's not much. Aaron Spelling came right up to me. He shook my hand. He said, hi, I'm Aaron Spelling. You know, thank you for coming in. And I thought, I mean, never happened before or since that a producer did that. And I said, this is a guy. He used to be an actor and he remembers what it was like to walk into a room of strangers and have to put out in that sense. Right. That impressed me. And he had us to our homes, his home several times. And he was very engaging, an engaging guy.
Did you go to those infamous Christmas parties at Spelling Man?
Oh, yeah. Yes. They were, I mean, it was a lot of fun. We had, I remember exactly what I wore.
You do?
Yes.
Do you think?
A lace dress, and I had a red slip made to wear under it.
And that must have been like a who's who of everyone.
Yeah. I mean, the other fun thing was getting invited to awards shows and being in the crowd with, oh, golly, I mean, people. I remember went to some award show and there was Michael Richards from Seinfeld. And I just said, I just have to tell you, my husband and I love your work on Seinfeld. And he was very nice. And, you know, so, you know, actors are fans too. We're fans of each other in a way.
Yeah. I would think that would be one of the best things about going to an award show.
Yeah.
I talk to so many people on this show that when I run into someone or have them back on the show and they remember my name, I'm always blown away. It's the little details. And when it comes to sheets, the only place I turn is Boll & Branch. Why? Because they pay attention to the little details. Boll & Branch was formed by a husband and wife team that set out to give sleepers more choices for high quality sheets at a fair price. And boy, did they ever accomplish that. What I love is the variety of colors. I chose the pewter mainly because it goes best with my apartment. The sheets are so elegant. They look and feel so sophisticated, but the price is so reasonable. That's why I chose them. They're 100% organic cotton. They are made toxin-free. And what I love is they get softer with every wash. Sheets that look high-end, sophisticated, and elegant, but are affordable, sign me up. And that is why I did sign up. These are the only sheets I will now use. And you guys need to check this out. So listen, you can try them worry-free for 30 nights with free shipping and returns. To experience the best sheets you've ever felt, choose Boll & Branch. And because you're listening to this podcast, you get an exclusive 15% off your first set of sheets with promo code VELVET at BollandBranch.com. That's Boll & Branch, B-O-L-L and B-R-A-N-C-H.com, promo code VELVET. Do you think Erin would be proud of Tori? I mean, this was her baby, this reboot.
Oh, yes. I think he would be. I think he'd be very proud of her. I mean, he's following in her footsteps. You know, he's. I mean, she's not maybe having as much success as he did, but he's a once in a blue moon phenomenon, the number of shows he cranked out.
Yeah.
And she's the mother of five. You know.
Yes. What? Do you, so in your practice as a licensed therapist, do you specialize in anything? I mean, do you get a lot of people that, you know, have these issues with fame and like, you know, because fame could be one of the most addicting drugs, you know, is that, I mean, you would.
No, I didn't get I'd say right now, I sort of gave up my office in 2018. So now I really only see clients that I've been seeing for many years. And you'd be amazed. A lot of people have come back over this past year because they're, you know, they're getting to the end of their rope. But so I'm only working with people I already know really well. But before that, I'd say I loved working with millennials. Most, you know, people in their, at the time they were in their 20s. I worked with a lot of couples, sort of in the early stages of a relationship and marriage, with young children, not so much in the older teenage and launching periods. That's just, it's sort of how it happened and what I was felt most comfortable with. I'm not good with couples who are really in fighting mode most of the time. You really need a referee there, and that's not what I'm good at. So, and I still enjoy the work, It's funny because I left in 2018, and then there was just a couple of people that wanted to continue doing it online, and then slowly they
now
back.
Right, but now that is the go-to method.
I know, isn't that funny? So I was already comfortable with it.
And millennials kind of relates to, you know, it's again that like this group of 20 somethings, now 30 somethings. That's funny that a lot of your clients are millennials.
Yeah. Well, my son's a millennial, so I suppose that's part of it. But this really works as a therapist. People don't want to go to a young person who's a therapist, right? So I did it in the right order. If I'm going to be an actor, do that first. Be a therapist later in life.
Do you feel that your acting helps you as a therapist? I mean, it sounds like the other way around.
My engagement with acting and my engagement in therapy stem from the same origins, which is that real fascination and interest in human beings and why they do the things they do and what makes for a good life and how to make the kind of choices that are helpful to you instead of the ones that ultimately aren't helpful. I talk about spirituality with a lot of my clients as well.
I was going to ask you about your book, When Your Child Has a Chronic Medical Illness.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Well, so my co-author, Frank Cilio, he's a psychologist who lives in New Jersey, and he knew Jason. And he's written a series of children's books. He wrote one called A World of Possibilities. Delightful book. And he's looking for people to, he's the great marketer. So he's looking for people to write blurbs for his book. And Jason, I guess, had told him that I was a therapist. So he got in touch with me through my professional email and said, you know, I see that you're involved with mindfulness. I've studied both Christianity and Buddhism. And so I've had a meditation practice for longer than I wish to reveal in public.
I don't reveal my age either, so I get it.
Well, everybody, it's already in the newspapers. I don't know why I worry about it, but probably close to 50 years I've been have a meditation practice of some kind. And so I said, sure, I'll, you know, send me the book. So he sent me the book. I thought it was delightful. And I wrote a nice blurb for him. And then he and his husband came to LA and said, you know, we'd love to take you out to lunch at the Polo Lounge. I'm there.
You don't say no to the Polo Lounge.
You don't say no to the Polo Lounge, especially actors. You know, we love to eat. So we had this marvelous conversation. Of course, he works with a lot of kids with various kinds of chronic medical illness. And he does a lot of parenting, parenting workshops. And obviously when you're working with kids, you're talking to parents. And I was a co-creator of a parenting class at the counseling center where I got my hours, and it's still, you know, going on. So I've done a lot of work with parents as well. And we got talking. He said, oh, you know, I've written all these children's books, but I'd really like to write a parenting book. And he said, but you know, I'm not a parent. And so nobody thinks I can write a parenting book. I said, oh yeah, that's too bad. And I walked out and I thought, this is exactly what I thought. I said, well, I'm a parent and I played one on television, which is probably more important. So I thought, oh God, that's a crazy idea. I barely know this man. So I sat on it for a day and I just couldn't let it go. So I sent him an email and said, you know, would it make sense for us to think about writing a book together? So we started talking. He was very excited about the idea. Apparently he'd had the same idea and also felt like, oh my God, I can't ask her to write a book with me. So in looking for a possible publisher, he had a relationship with the American Psychological Association because they'd published all of his children's books. And he said, he was talking to one of their representatives, and they said, you know, we're not really interested in a general parenting book, but if you can think of a good niche. And so he came back to me and he said, you know, I don't know if you'd be interested in this at all, but, you know, I have all these kids with chronic illness. I know that there's not very much out there, and I would like to write a parenting book for kids with chronic illness. And by that time, I was like, I am on board for whatever. I've always wanted to write a book. I've never been able to quite get it together. And this is an opportunity. It's not going to come again. And it has been, we worked for about 3 years on the book. It's been an amazing experience. And the fact that we get along so well, that our writing is so complementary, is nothing short of a miracle. I mean, he didn't know if I could write or not. I mean, I did go to Harvard, so I should have some minimal.
Well, there's a lot worse schools to go to. Yes. Mm-hmm. I would say there's a lot worse schools to go to, yes, than Harvard.
Yeah. So we started writing this book. He really organized the proposal. We worked on a chapter together because he's more familiar with this. And I felt I had something to offer because as a marriage and family therapist, we think systemically what goes on in the relationships. And we were talking about writing a book about the psychological impact of having having a child with a chronic illness. And that has impacts on the family system, on the couple system. And so I felt that there was, and I also, I did have some specialized training in grief and loss, which is a big part of this issue. And so he created a chapter list, and we split up the chapters. The APA liked our proposal and gave us a contract, and it was like, I mean, wow. I couldn't believe it was all happening. It was amazing. It was in some ways more mind-blowing than being on 90210, because I had worked my whole career to do something like be on 90210, but I hadn't really worked my whole, you know, therapy career in order to write a book. It was just seemed like this random thing that came out of nowhere, and all because of 90210. I don't think we would have made the connection if it weren't for that. So
you see it all.
So I cannot complain. It's been nothing but grace for me.
Well, maybe now you're in your third act, so to speak. I've had lots of different careers. Maybe do you have an itching now to write more books?
I do, but I'm not going to talk about it. It's a very different kind of book. I'm sort of deep into spirituality these days. I'm in a 2-year program studying the Christian mystics.
Interesting.
Which is really mind-blowing. I really love it. And there's aspects of acting which are about, acting is about presence, right? Being fully present with your own circumstances and the imaginary circumstances. So there's some overlap there that I'd like to explore in a book. And I could also lace it with personal experiences. So it might appeal, it wouldn't be like an autobiography, but it would have sort of personal experiences in it that might appeal to a fan as well. So
interesting.
We'll see. I've done a little bit of thinking about it and beginning to structure it, but I haven't really started to sit down and just work on it. That's what I have to do.
Now that you've been in this career as a therapist all this time, and then we'll wrap up, like, have you ever, I mean, I guess you said you didn't keep in touch with anyone, but like, has anyone ever reached out to you, like from the cast? Like, you know, this is your job now. Like, that's not a conflict of interest. You're a therapist. I mean, I know you don't want to give advice on set, but like, say Brian Austin Green needed some counseling. Well, he knows a counselor right here.
Yeah, no.
Or is that a conflict of interest?
It's a little bit of a conflict of interest. When you know somebody so well in one way, I mean, I would have been open to it if anyone had been comfortable with it. But it's, coming into therapy is a very vulnerable process. And I would think it would be difficult to come into therapy with someone who knew you at a certain point in your life felt a little out of control. And now you're in a very different, is that person going to bring those other thoughts or ideas about you into the room? It's better to start with a clean slate, I think.
That makes sense.
Although, I often have people who are not close friends, but casual friends say, oh, Jay, I'd love to have you be my therapist. And I go, can't do that. It's a conflict of interest. It's what we call a dual relationship.
Right. And like, you know too much that as a professional, you would keep out of it, but the subconscious, who knows?
Well, yeah. And it's really about the other person, what they feel comfortable with. And, you know, those kids, they didn't know what was going on in my head or what I thought of them. And I would think it would be rife for a lot of feeling that I'm, you know, making judgments about them or something. I don't know. But yeah, no, I wouldn't
think
that.
That makes sense. Speaking of loss, because I know that's one of the issues you deal with, like, how hard was it to do the reboot, like, without Luke? And I know you were only there for a day.
Well, that was the saddest part. Especially getting to see everyone else and not having the opportunity to see the man he became was really kind of heartbreaking. He was a lovely man, a real grounded, a real person, you know, and I was very sad about that.
Yeah, that's hard.
And we all were. And it was nice that there are several moments where they give a collective homage to that sense of loss.
Yeah, I mean, that's a loss.
Yeah, they'll never all be together again.
No. And I mean, I think that's why Shannon did, she's discussed, like, that's why I think she finally decided to do the show.
That makes sense.
Like, as a sense of closure.
Yeah. Let's all get together and do this for Luke.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, he wasn't going to be able to be on it because he was doing Riverdale.
Yeah.
But, gosh, that was such a shock.
And so young.
Yeah. Yeah, we actually, I was heading on a vacation with a friend and with some friends we had met at the airport for breakfast before the flight, just right after he died. And the waitress was so sweet. She served us all and everything. And at the end, she came up and she said, I'm so sorry about your friend, Luke, who died. And It was very touching. She was, you know, clearly, you know, she wanted to give us all our space to just enjoy our meal. And yet she wanted to communicate her sense of loss, that we were united in that sense of loss. That was a beautiful moment.
That is a beautiful moment. I thought you were going to say that's how you found out, that you didn't know until the waitress mentioned it.
Oh, God, no.
I was going to say, that's tough. Yeah.
That would have been very bad. I mean, I'm not really good at keeping up on things on social media and stuff, but I did somehow get that news.
Yeah, it's tough. And now what Shannon's going through with her cancer.
Yeah. And can you get me up to date on that? 'Cause
I don't think there's much. I mean, she had treatment and it went away and now it's back. No, I mean, it's been back for like a year-ish.
Yeah.
I think even a little longer.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, even that is probably a miracle. Sounded like it was pretty advanced when it came back. I know. It's tough.
This is why, I'm sure you know this as a therapist, like, don't all these fighting on set over dresses, like, does anything really matter other than your health? I mean, that's how I live my life. I'm like, as long as I'm healthy today, I'm takes a lot to really get me there. You could do anything or say anything to me, and I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think this pandemic too has made it very clear what's really important. What's, you know, friends and family.
Yeah.
People that we connect with. That's what matters.
That's what matters.
Yeah.
Two really final questions. Do you ever watch anything like Shannon's on Charmed, Luke is on Riverdale? Like you said, like, did you ever watch any of these big projects?
I often will watch at least one episode or something like that. But I have to tell you, the show that Shannon did that I thought was brilliant was Breaking Up with Shannon Doherty. She, you know, people would come, they wanted to break off the relationship. Now, I mean, I think it shows a certain amount of, you know, have the guts to break up with a person on your own. But on the other hand, she was so good at it. She was so creative in how she created these scenarios where she could deliver this bad news to people. I was so impressed. See, that's something I'd be terrible at. I mean, I can do it when I need to do it in my own life, but doing it for other people, oh God, no.
I was going to say, even as a therapist, you wouldn't be good at it?
No. No.
And so out of Charmed, another brilliant Aaron Spelling show, out of all of Shannon's projects, it's Breaking Up with Shannon Doherty that you were.
Well, I suppose it's because by that time I wasn't so into acting, and that she, I just thought the whole concept, I mean, she created this whole show. It's more than just playing a role, you know. I was just impressed with her creativity and panache, really. She just handled herself so well.
And to me, because listen, I watch everything with Shannon, that to me ties in, like, this show works was probably greenlit because of your reputation. To me, it ties into it.
Yes, which goes back to, there is no such thing as bad celebrity publicity. There's only publicity.
Yeah, like breaking up with Tori Spelling, that doesn't make sense. Breaking up, of course Shannon can break up with you. She can,
exactly.
This is, have you read the tabloids? This makes complete sense.
Complete sense. Well, with Tori, we had marriage counseling with Tori Spelling. You know, there's been a slew of these reality shows, and I've gotten approached by people as a therapist. You know, would I want to, you know, do therapy on TV? Or do I have clients who'd like to do therapy on TV? I feel enough pressure in the room to be a good therapist. I don't need to have cameras on it. Aside from, how can you, I don't know if that was helpful for Tori and her husband, but how are you really, really deeply honest if it's being conveyed to millions of people who you have no idea how they're going to view what you're saying? It's a total crapshoot. So yeah, no, it's nothing I would recommend to a client.
And you get calls like, oh, you know, Beverly Hills Housewives, we need a therapist to be on.
Well, no, these are reality shows for showing therapy.
Right.
Right. We're going to do a show about marriage therapy, working, or, you know, and how to recover from an affair or something. And I see the benefit of those shows. I mean, I do think there's something very beneficial if you feel called to do something like that. I am not called to do something like that. It's the last thing I want to do.
Did you watch True Tory? Because it was hard to watch.
No, I didn't.
And I don't mean that in a judgment way. I just meant in a, like, compassionate way.
Yeah, painful.
Yeah.
I'm sure. You know, marriage, family, a couple, you know, marital counseling is difficult. It's probably the most difficult counseling that there is.
Of all.
Yeah. Somehow families, it's a little more, it's the intensity, I think, of the marital bond that makes that so challenging.
As we wrap up, how do you want to be remembered as an actress?
Oh, I mean, I'm going to be remembered as Cindy Walsh, so it doesn't really matter if I want something else, but I hope people will know that I did theater as well, and then I did some, the things that I'm most proud of are I played Alma in Summer and Smoke opposite Christopher Reeve, the Amundsen, and I'm this play that I was doing with Theater 40. It's a play called The Manor. We did it in Doheny Mansion up above Beverly Hills, and I played Marion, the wife of the family. And those are the two roles that I feel proudest of as in terms of my theater work. But a lot of them, but I also did Gemini, which was just loads of fun and very cool. I did Gemini in the 70s, and I'm still close with those people.
You are.
Yeah. I mean, you get married, you have a family, and you get pretty tunnel vision for a while. But I've reconnected with both of my main co-stars, all of them that are still alive, except one. And it's so lovely to see them. And that was the same feeling I had on the set of the reboot. It was just lovely to see everybody and be with everyone and just be who we are now. You know? It's really
yeah.
Nice.
Well, I loved the reboot, so thrilled that you're a part of it.
Me too.
Where can everyone find you online? And is there anything else you want to put out there? I always give people a chance at the end. Thank you for entertaining all of my many questions about Miss Cindy
Walsh. Oh, you're
very
welcome. I just want to say that you can get my book on Amazon. When your child has a chronic medical illness, a guide for the parenting journey. And if you do get the book and you find it of value, please give it a review. We're getting very good response from people, but there's anywhere from 15 to 40% of children have some kind of chronic illness. Now we didn't focus on things like ADD or autism. We were focusing more on things like asthma and diabetes and because of the medical aspects of it. But I hope if there are any, healthcare people, professionals who work with kids, that they'll check it out, because it could be we're hoping that it'll just be very, very helpful for parents who are, it's hard enough to be a parent these days and yeah. It's overwhelming enough, but to add a chronic medical illness into the mix just makes everything that much more challenging. And
I couldn't imagine.
We're just hoping that it will help people.
I couldn't imagine. Like, I have two friends that have children with not necessarily chronic illnesses, but like special needs. And it's just, I mean,
it is.
It's any type of, it's literally overwhelming. So, yeah.
And while we're focused on chronic medical illness, aspects of what we talk about are going to show up with any kind of special needs. How does it affect the rest of the family? How does it affect the parents? How do you bring in extended family, working with the school system, working with the medical system? We tried to cover a broad range of topics. So, and we're just hoping we did enough justice to them. You could probably write a whole book about each one of the chapters, but we tried to cover, just see if we could cover the ground and help people with this who are struggling probably.
Well, everyone needs to go to Amazon and get it. And yes, I'm all about reviews. So if people like it, they need to leave a review from someone that has their own podcast. It's all about the review.
All about the reviews.
And are you on social media, even though you don't keep up with it?
Yes. Gosh. I have to look up my handles.
I'll include it too, because I don't know what yours is by heart.
Okay.
I don't know if it's just, yes.
So on Instagram, I'm Carol Potter 90210, and on Twitter
is
I'm much more into Instagram too.
Me too, for a lot of reasons.
Yeah. And on Twitter, I am at Carol S as in Sam P 90210.
Listen, you got to use it. It's how people find you.
It's how people can find me. So why not?
Everyone needs to follow you. I really appreciate you taking your time to do this.
Oh, I'm so appreciate you asking me. Thank you so much.
I will connect with you on Instagram too. I'm good about keeping in touch with people. So,
and check out Randy Rainbow.
I'm going to go do that like right now because I can't, I have like this vision and I have to, you know, listen, if he's half as cute as Brian Austin Green, I will.
He's very cute. He's okay. A very good looking man.
I'll take it then.
You know Randy Rainbow, right?
Yeah, but I just can't picture like what he's, I need to see myself next to him.
His face might be even a little narrower than yours. I'm not sure, but it's just something.
Really?
You know, sometimes I get weird connections between how people look, and it's not really how the specifics of their features, but there's something about the whole thing that reminds me of the other person. So it might
I'll take it. There are worse people to be compared to, right?
Well, yes, yes. So this has been really delightful. Thank you for inviting me on.
Thank you for taking your time and not rushing and just entertaining me with all my questions. So,
all right.
We'll keep in touch. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I do too.
Have a good day.
You too.
Bye, Carol.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. Thanks for listening to yet another episode of Behind the Velvet Rope. Because without you listeners, I would just be a crazy person with voices in my head. And if you like what you hear, subscribe on Apple Podcasts under Behind the Velvet Rope. And when you're done subscribing, feel free to leave a 5-star write-up review, because the write-up reviews actually count. We read each and every one of them. We post the best ones, and the reviews really help our shows keep going. And we really appreciate everything you guys say, especially the positive ones. And if you want to find us online, we're at Behind Velvet Rope on Instagram. We are at David Yontef on Instagram. We're Behind the Velvet Rope on Apple Podcasts. Or head on over to Patreon, because you know what? There are just some things we can't talk about here. So for our bonus episodes, go to Patreon and type in Behind the Velvet Rope. And if you still aren't sick of me and you want more David, go to Cameo and book me on Cameo. And you can ask me anything there. I'll answer whatever you want. And I have a bargain basement price of $10. Thank you guys. See you soon.